Hey guys, welcome back to the Way UK podcast. My name is Jesse, and today we are joined by a very special guest, the wonderful
Rev Chris. Yeah, is that how I introduce you? Rev Chris, everyone. Hello.
Rev.
Yeah, that's for my kind of online I'm known, Rev Chris.
So online presence.
That's what I go with. Normally, hi, I'm Chris. Chris Lee.
No, I like Rev. It feels professional.
Yeah, it kind of started when I was at university, actually. Everyone called me the Rev. So when I was playing hockey, I was called the Rev. So that just stuck. And then when I did other things online, I just was like, oh, they just call me Rev.
Rev Chris. I like it. Do I get the authority to call myself Rev Jesse?
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
when do I earn that? What's the process?
A reverend is a title. Right?
Okay.
When you get ordained, you get that. It feels like, you know, Top Gun, like with Maverick, they have their call signs. I always see it's like my call sign.
Yeah, strong.
I was thinking that last night. I was like, is that arrogant or is that just fun? And I was like, oh, it's a balance between those two things. But if I was a fighter pilot, it'd be called the Rev.
The Rev. It's all about balance.
Yeah.
We did a podcast about a year ago with the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of the head of the Church of England.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
but someone told me that he's allowed to ordain on the spot.
Yeah.
So
if in a call of crisis he could do that. Yeah.
I did ask.
Anyone can baptize on the spot as well in a kind of crisis situation. Saliva of your mouth.
Really?
To baptize someone if they were like they often did it in the world wars. Yeah.
Wow.
People would go out and as they're dying, they would baptize them.
Have you ever done that?
I have, thankfully, no. Most of mine are pretty standard.
This is good.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we're gathering as a perspective of who you are.
Yes.
You know a lot about spit.
Spit, yeah.
And baptism.
Okay. Yeah.
And your name's Rev Chris.
My name's Rev
Chris. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And Rev Chris, you are a Christian.
I am a Christian, yes. I am a priest in the Church of England, so I hope I'm a Christian. I am a Christian.
Wonderful. And just to like go straight in.
Yeah.
How did you become a Christian? Where did you grow up? What was your kind of childhood story?
Okay. Gosh, it's always hard to know where to start because I've always felt like my mother's a Christian and she brought us to church as kids. And I always believed in God. And if someone said to me as a kid growing up or at university, are you a Christian? I would be like, yes, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. But I didn't really know the person of Jesus until later on. So it's quite hard to kind of, I don't know. I wouldn't say I wasn't a Christian. Like I believed in God, but my faith grew and I really got to know Christ when I was like late teens, probably 19, 20. And when I basically quit a job and I went to live in Africa. So I went from what I would call famine to feast. So I went from a kind of, I believe in God, and I was slowly being drawn. I believe, I look back now and know that God was drawing me. I suddenly felt this ever-increasing kind of filter of God exists and what does my life look through like through that. And this kind of what I would call like a long, well, birth, really. You know, like we talk about being born again, but really birth is like 9 months. You know, it's gestation, it's growth, it's then the moment of the birth. And I had this pregnancy of faith for a long time. And then really when I went to Africa about the age of 21, I quit a job, put my house on for a house. I owned a house and a job plan, and it was like a career path. And I was like, no, who am I? You know, what's life about? I felt like I was on a conveyor belt of that. Just people were telling me what my life should be. And I was kind of just, you know, school, university, job, house, life. And I was like, I didn't know who I was. So I basically quit my job, put my house on the market, and I went to Africa. And I lived in Tanzania for 3 years in the middle of nowhere in bushland with the Maasai. And it was there that I really found the calling, that I fell in love with Christ. And I felt called to ordain ministry. And I was ordained in the Diocese of Mount Kilimanjaro when I was 24.
Gosh.
Yeah. So, and then that you know, massive. That felt like the biggest change of my life was my decision to go to Africa. That felt like the first decision I made for me.
Wow.
And then I went there, and then I knew my life would change. I felt this sense of purpose and power that was kind of moving around me. And I was like, I'm going to do this. So yeah, I really went out there, and everything changed, and fell in love with Christ. And we do these things called confirmation safaris, where we drive in the bushland, and we, you know, the bishop who I was working with, I was helping him out and driving and carrying his bags basically. And he would baptize and confirm like hundreds of people in these villages and these, you know, stick churches. And in these baptizing these people, sometimes, you know, crazy things would happen, like manifestations of demonic activity. People would leap up, and I was just like, what is going on? And I was like, again, from this kind of famine to this feast, to be thrown into basically what I was reading in the book of Acts as I was kind of growing my faith. I was like reading these stories of like deliverance and miracles and stuff. And then I was kind of living it in this season of my life. And I kind of just grew spiritually and just fell in love with this and knew that this was what I was called to do, and trained, and yeah, I got ordained and stayed in Africa a bit longer, and then felt what was next. You know, I thought maybe my life would be a missionary in Tanzania and in Africa. And I felt kind of oddly felt the whisper of the Lord say, I kind of want you to be a missionary back in the West. Mm. So I went back to the UK and then decided to do more training in theology, because while my biblical understanding was very strong when I did my course to be ordained in Africa, it was an exam on every book of the Bible. You know, you had to read the whole Bible, examine every book, memory verses on every book, super intense, just here's the Bible, devour it, which is great. Mm. But I wasn't learning things like ethics or church history or some of the great theologians of the past, and I wanted to do that as well. So I went to Cambridge, got into Ridley Hall, matriculated into Cambridge University, loved my time in Cambridge, played sport with the uni, and grew, met my wife there in lectures, fell in love, just the most romantic time, you know, in Cambridge, going down the punts, you know, dragging a bottle of wine in Cambridge and with a punt and, you know, falling in love. I was just like, what is my life? You know, like 2 weeks ago before I went to Cambridge, I was, you know, we were slaughtering a goat in the mountains wearing Maasai robes. And then 2 weeks later, I was in Cambridge formal hall in kind of Harry Potter robes, eating three-course meals with a Latin grace and cycling to Greek class. And I was like, where is my life? You know, I was having these cultural, like, car crashes going on. Like, boom. But loved it.
Yeah.
And that changed my life. And, yeah, and then got ordained further to be priest. Moved to Central London Church, was priested there. And then been in London as a priest, and got offered the church that I'm currently at, which is called St. Saviour's Wendell Park. Whoop! If you're in West London, that's where we are. Come find us. And then during that period of time, was thinking, you know, what am I going to do? I'm the spiritual head of 14,000 people. When you become a vicar, you are in a sense given this authority to be a parish priest, and your parish is made up of an area of land, and my area of land consists of 14,000 people. And Church of England is like a state church, so we have, in a sense, an authority or a right given to us to be the spiritual head of that whole area. And I was like, I was, you know, 29, 30, and I was suddenly in charge of, I was an incumbent vicar, 14,000 people. And I was like, oh man, this is scary. Mm. So I wanted to do more in my own spiritual growth. So I established a kind of monastic order called Young Franciscans for young people, and developed a rule of life and a spiritual kind of formational project. And at the same time, got involved in YouTube and social media, which sounds a bit random, but my brother-in-law had a YouTube channel and asked me to be on it. And initially it was all like, here's some chicken wings and talk about it. I was like, oh, it's really nice. I like chicken wings.
Yeah, it's true.
Who doesn't like fried chicken, you know? And so I was doing that, I was talking about that. And then I became quite a popular guest, and they knew I was a priest. And on one of the episodes, I prayed and for the students who were doing an exam. And that just made a massive impact on their video, and these videos started going viral. Lots of people started to kind of find me online, and then I would do these cultural reacts. So we would we would film an episode, like a video about Billie Eilish or Ariana Grande or BTS or Justin Bieber. And on YouTube, they would play these videos to me and I would kind of do a react as a priest. And I think a lot of people thought, well, priests are kind of old, you know, overweight guys who are judgmental. And I was this young guy, maybe a little bit overweight, I don't know, but who knows? Anyway, I'm sucking it in.
Don't worry.
And I would just come, you know, try to be non-judgmental, show an aspect of love and grace, and feed a positivity into these young people. And that really hit. And these videos started going viral and millions of views. And you know, crazy numbers, like now there's the videos I'm in are like 300, 400 million views. And then that meant loads of people online started to find me and looked, you know, on Instagram. And then my Instagram filled up. And then I thought to myself, wow, I've got this platform all of a sudden. What shall I do with that? So I decided to start a kind of project, literally just randomly one day. I was like, oh, man, how do I get a message of the gospel to these young people and give them something, you know, good? And I was like, oh, I can't really do a sermon because it's only 60 seconds. Maybe I could condense something, or maybe I'll just call it like 60-second sermon. And then I was just like, one day I was like, oh, let's just do that. Hey, 60-second sermon, me, Rev Chris. And then gave a 60-second message back in the day when Instagram only allowed you 60 seconds before Reels or any of that. So then that just got its own traction and suddenly loads of people started following me from like different parts of the world and coming in for these 60-second sermons. And then that got me national coverage in the UK. And I was asked to come on Good Morning Britain and This Morning and radio. And I was doing these interviews and these sessions and these things. And the, you know, the pandemic hit and people were searching and lots of people found me online. And I kind of got an influx of like 60,000 increased following in the space of 6 months of just through the pandemic. And then that opened doors for books and podcasts. And it was kind of like, what's going on? And this crazy thing that the Lord just opened this door for me. And I suddenly felt called into it. And I remember one day really powerfully, you know, I was just like, Lord, I was opening my Bible and I was like, what is going on? And I was flicking through Acts. And Acts 17, Saints... Paul is in Athens and he's standing in front of this place called the Areopagus. And it says in the Bible, it says he went to the place where the nations gathered, where they shared and talked about the latest ideas, but did nothing. And he spoke to them there about the gospel. And I was just like, boom. And the Lord was like, this is what you're doing. You're basically, you're on a platform where the nations gather, where they share and they talk about the latest stuff. And I want you to stand on those steps and speak. And then oof, that really impacted me. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so, yeah, that's what I've been doing. And alongside just being a vicar, a dad, a husband, and just feeling this other ministry that the Lord has called me into and of doing this stuff. And, you know, it's this great season that I'm in. And I saw your stuff, The Way, and I was like, wow, that's really great. We randomly met on a bus and then, and that's where I'm at. And that's I suppose brings me up to today.
Today. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That
was one question and a long answer.
No, it's wonderful. We get the whole picture. And kind of went into some of the other questions I was going to ask around
social media. Well, we can go more.
Which is great. And, And I guess like we've seen the journey now.
Yeah.
Rev Chris, we know him. We've seen him from 19, quitting his job, like moving to Africa randomly. Well, not randomly, but moving to Africa.
Yeah, it's a bit random.
And then this whole process to bring you to this stage now. I guess like within the process, just like I'm going to kind of divvy it up section by section and like maybe what God taught through the sections.
Sure.
And just like key moments within each part, which you've kind of already touched on, but just... like to go a little bit more, like for example with Africa, you said you know, you saw things and that you almost saw what you read in the Bible in person, which not the majority of us have seen. Like all these, you said the word like manifestations, where it's kind of like in the Bible it's where you see like strongholds is a big word, but like people carrying dark things and like demons getting like released. And sometimes that's quite outward. It's quite expressive. It's quite confusing. It's a big topic. And not all of us are going to see that. Like I haven't seen loads of that. And I guess for you in Africa, what were some key moments from just being like, oh, I've grown up in church.
Yeah.
It's what my parents always believed. I feel like I'm kind of on this journey, which isn't like chosen by me. I'm kind of on this conveyor belt. What would you say are like maybe two key moments where you like really reflected and got really like encountered by God, or maybe God spoke something, or maybe you read something?
I mean, there's loads of different moments of kind of encounter and impact, and powerful experience. Once was, if you want to talk about like miracle stuff, is I was worshiping in church once, and just felt the Lord kind of, you know, the Lord gives you an impression. It's just like, I want you to move here or something. You just get that sense. So I felt the Lord say to me, I want you to come to pray in the place that you sometimes pray, which I knew was weirdly on top of a water tower. So I used to pray on top of a water tower. So with the way we catch rain while we're out in Africa is the raining season would come with the gutters would fill, the gutters would fall into a tank, into the ground, fill up this massive tank in the ground. And then we'd use a little generator to pump the water up a little water tower into a kind of one of those black tanks that held plastic black tanks that held water. And then that would be filtered into the house and give it pressure because it was high up. So the gravity would pressure into the taps. So we used to climb up the pipes and sit on top and pray. So I felt like that's what the Lord said, go pray there. So I left this worship kind of evening and just went in there, just felt called to go and pray there. And when I was going there, I was like, I can't really be bothered to climb up this. It's quite hard to get up. You have to climb up the pipes like Spider-Man, you know. I was like, oh. And I was like, maybe I'll just sit at the bottom of it. But when I got there was a ladder leaning up against it. It was the first time there's ever seen a ladder there. So I kind of jokingly went, all right, Lord, I suppose I'll climb up then. So I climbed up this ladder and sat on top, and I started to pray. And there was a big famine in the area at the time, and the rains hadn't come, and everyone was worried. That's why one of the reasons that we were praying. And I was just praying normally at the top, and then I suddenly felt this, you know, this sense of pray for rain. So I was like, Lord, would you send rain? And it was simple like that. Just, Lord, would you send rain? And then to my right, I still remember, it's like 20 years ago, to my right, a voice, audible voice, spoke. And it said, in 3 days. And I was like, what? And I, you know, I was just like, but it was funny. It was like sunshine hitting me. It was like the way that the voice spoke. And it wasn't like inward voice. It was an audible voice that I looked up to see. It said, in 3 days. And I looked to see where the voice had come from. And in listening to the voice, I felt cleansed. I felt like I could believe this voice. It was like as if sunshine spoke. It was super, super weird and powerful. And yet I knew that this voice had never uttered a lie, that it was utter truth, that I could completely believe it. So I was like, okay, it's going to rain in 3 days. So I started telling everyone it's going to rain in 3 days. And they looked at me a bit strange, but I was always a bit strange. And I said, leave your buckets out. And everyone's like, okay. And I told the bishop, and I said, I think it's going to rain in 3 days. I know you're going on a big drive in 3 days, so just be aware, I think the rains are going to come. And he kind of looked at me. He's like, okay, well, I can drive in the rain, you know. I was like, of course you can. And then 3 days come, and it's, you know, we're there in blue skies. And I'm just like, I'm doing a Bible exam on one of the biblical characters, Isaiah, I think. I stop and I'm like, Lord, I completely feel that you spoke to me. I mean, I heard you speak, and I was like, it was either you or an angel or something, but you spoke in 3 days. You said it's going to rain. It's blue skies. Like, what's, I've told people. And I just felt the Lord just say, faith and patience, just hold. And then I was like, fine, finished this exam, went to lunch, and then boom, the roof just, because we were a corrugated iron roof, and these black clouds appeared from nowhere. And the rains came, and people were like looking at me. And I remember one girl stopping. She just looked at me like, and I was like, wow. And I just, everyone ran outside, but I just stopped. And I was like, oh, thank you, Father. You know, and so that was a massive impact in my life as well. And, you know, those key experiences and of God that I still remember and hold on to, and other things happened, but yeah.
No, it's great. I mean, it's just such like a call for us to know that this is our God.
Was transported once as well, which sounds really weird, but it's really hard to articulate in a way that doesn't just sound like maybe you got it wrong. But we were driving, people were sick, and we were driving once, and basically I was moved. The whole car was just shifted forward on a long, long journey, and we all just looked around like, what just happened? And we had this overwhelming sense of joy And we just carried on as if it was normal, but we were shifted to the last moment of the journey, and we don't know why it happened or what.
As in, like, how long did you have like, to
it was
go
like
left?
It was basically a really long journey. I'd been sick. I wasn't very well. And I felt a lot better. I was driving a load of pastors to a conference, and we were driving back, me and three other training pastors, and we were just shifted forward. All I can say is we were just suddenly the village ahead, the last village before we returned home, and we just set back. We were on our way to go back a two-hour journey, and we were just shifted.
And how long was the journey from then?
It's like 2 and a bit hours. Oh, but from the end, it was like 20 minutes home.
Really?
And we didn't, wow. In the time, it wasn't like, oh, you know, the harps went and angels sang and we were carried. It was just, we were shifted. And then we were like, what just happened? You know, we were just like, how did we get here? And we just laughed. It was a real sense of joy. And we carried on our day as normal. And it was nothing. And then I looked back and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then I wasn't sure. I was like, did that happen? And like, we all just questioned it. And then I just left it. And then I remember someone talking about being shifted in a journey once. And I remember that's what happened. And so anyway, but yeah, so weird things happened and cool stuff happens. And
yeah.
God is able. And I think if we were more able to naturally accept the supernatural, we'd probably see it more. Like the story of Moses, you know, when he throws down the stick and it becomes a snake, it's like, woo. But the probably the greater miracle is it coming back to a stick and Moses just picking it up, being okay with that. And I think if we could be okay with miracles, I think God would probably be more like, okay, I'm going to trust you with them, because you're not going to get weird about it and become big-headed and arrogant and whatever. Mm. So I think hopefully that's what we're going to see more in the future, where we are able to just naturally and do this supernatural stuff and be like completely fine with it, rather than be like, woo, look at my ministry. It would be like, oh yeah, you know, pray for someone to be healed and then don't, you know, I don't know if this is right, but you know, like go in front of church and tell everyone all the time. You know, one of the key biblical characters that I treasure is Mary, because she's someone who consistently says, you know, she treasured up all these things in her heart. And she was the one who pondered and treasured. She doesn't have her own book, and there's no resurrection story to Mary. And do you really believe Jesus didn't visit his mum? Of course. Of course, he had resurrection stories, but she just, that was for her. She treasured them in her heart. There is a time to say, but there is a time to close the door and do it and know that your father's speaking to you in secret, because the intimacy there is really powerful. And so, yeah, I think that hopefully is something we'll see more and more.
No, it's brilliant. And I do think it's just encouraging to know, to hear these stories. And actually, like, to lean in when we hear these stories, rather than just being like, oh, that's great for Africa.
Yeah.
But being like, oh no, we do have the same God.
Yeah.
This is available. Mm. This is on offer for us. Mm. But also being aware that for you, when you saw these miracles, that was very key for you finding your faith. It's like, oh, I'm kind of in this place of half in, figuring it out for myself. So I'm going to move here. And then you suddenly saw it. You're like, great, this is visible. This is evidence. I'm going to step into this.
It was, I would nuance that a little bit. It was more, it was not necessarily the thing that gave me the faith. It was a marker that I hold on to as a strength of faith. So my faith already existed. It was growing and I believed. But it was more like, you know, when the Israelites passed through waters and the waters stopped, they were told by when they're going into the promised land, pick up stones. So when the future generations see these stones, you can tell the story about the stone. And for me, they're like these stones that I remember because memory is a weapon. You know, the enemy loves to say, it didn't happen, you're not loved, this, you know, and the rise of this the deconstruction, I think it's because a lot of people have forgotten what God has done for them. Like they weren't stupid or naive or crazy when they were having these worship experiences in church, but they just lost them and they've forgotten. And I think one of the key things for us as Christians is to know we're in a battle and to know that we have an enemy, the world, the flesh and the devil, and hold on to these key moments and be like, oh no, this made a massive impact and I'm going to remember it and use it as a weapon next time we feel floundered or pulled apart or go through a season of fear or doubt, which will happen. So just these stones, these markers are really helpful.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, yeah, I love that. You know, Psalm 103, it's like, forget not his benefits. And it lists all these things that we intentionally to remember. And like even your example of the Israelites picking up these stones and it is a marker for their faith. And it's like life can be tough. Yeah. It gets really hard. And like to have things to look back on is really helpful sometimes. To take it a slight different lane and kind of away from, well, not different lane, but just away from this place of Africa.
Yeah.
Where you do see miracles happen.
Yeah.
You now live in the UK. You mentioned earlier you felt called to come back here. And I would say that in the UK, the supernatural isn't expected daily, generally speaking, for some. And you even said, oh, I think when we expect it, like God will trust us with it more. And from your experience, you've clearly seen stuff, right? You've seen it. And so surely, like, you of all people, you should expect to see it. And the kind of simple question is do you? It's like in the UK as like a pastor of a local church.
I think it's a good question. I think it's a natural question. I think there's a couple of things that immediately strike is in Africa, everyone believes in the spiritual realm. Everyone, it's pretty accepted. And the way the enemy often works there is more fear-based. So, you know, witch doctors and things like that. And so it's a dense acceptance of the spiritual realm. So if in a weird way, and I, you know, it's as if spiritual activity is more active and heightened because it's not is there isn't there. It's just known that there is. So the lens of which most of the population look at is with a spiritual lens, which I don't know in the kind of the way the cosmos is set up, but you know, faith and that expectancy from people feeds something maybe that you do see a lot more activity. I think in the West, the way that the enemy often works is has certainly traditionally been to just lead people towards more an atheism, to more a disconnect, a numbness towards the spiritual. And so it's a better kind of principality, power, strategic from the enemy's point of view to not allow that activity to be so prevalent in terms of demonic work and things like that. It's much more subtle. Perhaps that's the reason that you don't see that activity. But from a God moving perspective, I do see the miracles of faith, and I think those things are really powerful. And I think a lot of us, we love to be what I would call like storm chasers. You know, like there's that great 90s film called Twister. I think they're remaking it actually, where these guys, they chase tornadoes. And I think in one way I understand that, and the way I see that spiritually is we have these like big conferences or these meetings where we're like, we need to go after the miracles. And I just imagine basically like Christians, like these storm chasers going after any place where they see this activity going on. And in one way, I see that as hunger. You know, with these young people, we're hungry, want to be where God's moving and his presence is. I just can't get away from that echo of the Lord's voice, which says, you know, a sinful and perverse generation long for signs. And I'm just like, that just echoes in my head. So I think that I see the miracle of faith and the miracle of people coming to faith in the world where they don't see it. I see that. I don't see as much, you know, I haven't had the audible voice of God speak to me in the UK, but I've definitely been moved in my life through powerful dreams and being spoken to in powerful ways where the Lord has just like hit things off the page at me. I've had experiences. Do you know what? I don't know if this is okay to share, but I had an experience here, St. Paul's, Hammersmith. Upstairs, these people are going to do me for heresy here, but all I can say is this is what I felt like. I was upstairs, I was in one of your evening worships here once. As a pastor, I just wanted to come along and just worship incognito. And I was going through some real hardship and some real stuff in my heart. And there was a call to, you know, the front or whatever. And I just, and I stood there, I was praying, and I suddenly felt the presence of someone to my left, like powerfully. And it felt like mercy to my left. Like there was just this mercy. And the way this is going to sound, only way I can experience was, it was as if Mary was standing to my left. And I know that's quite Catholic doctrine and kind of weird, but that's all I can say. It felt as if Mary, I spoke to my bishop about it. And she said, maybe it was the motherhood of God. And I was like, fair enough. That's maybe what Mary means. But anyway, all I can say is a sense of Mary being there and this offering me mercy in my heart. And I just felt massively healed. And, anyway, so these experiences of feeling the presence of God, and there are other times where I felt spoken to and had seeing and dreams and things like that. And it does go on. I don't know. If we look for it, then we're constantly looking for emotional connection rather than, and I think God often takes us into the desert for a deepening. And where we go in a depth of faith that goes beyond emotion, so that we have resilience that is deeper than what I think or feel. Mm. Because to be honest, our brains often are our enemy. They're often the place of great turmoil. And if we, and our emotions can move from, you know, far left to far right so quickly. The heart in the Bible is often actually seen as a problematic thing, not something you should just trust. And so if we constantly seek emotional highs instead of like a spiritual depth, which comes, I think, sometimes through greater silence, contemplation, stillness. You know, the psalmist, one of the psalms, most powerful verses for me is 46, which says, "Be still and know that I am God." And that psalm is all about the nations are in tumult, there's oppression, there's war. And the psalmist says, and amongst all of this, be still and know that I am God. And there's something really powerful that I think as Christians today we need to reconnect with, is that stillness, that silence, that depth that says, I know God is here. And it's not just dependent on how I feel about it, or even if I've seen something, but there's something deep within me that cries out, God is here. And you know it beyond a sense or a feeling or a thought. You know, you just know. I don't know how to articulate, you know, the poets and the you know, church fathers or desert fathers might be better at that kind of articulation, but something that increases your depth when you can get past just the physical and you go somewhere deeper. And I don't know. I don't know if that's helpful. Kind of,
yeah,
I always shrink up at quick answers, I think. Yeah. I'm always like, I think there's nuances, there's complexity in life.
Yeah.
No,
I think that's brilliant. I think it's really good. And to name stuff as well and be like, there's stuff we can't quite articulate, we can't quite explain what, but it felt like Mary. It's like, there are complexities when it comes to God. And sometimes when we try to find formulas to God, it's when he kind of holds his hand back and then like lets us try other things. And it's an interesting process, and it's not a linear process, which I love that we've heard a little bit. And I guess something I'd love to touch on is kind of the generation, like this generation of Gen Z and kind of the our viewers, like some practicals. You mentioned earlier that, you know, there's been this kind of culture in the UK of being quite atheist and being like, oh, I'm not gonna expect that there's a spiritual world. And I'm not going to expect to see anything, and I need proof. And I'd say I see that shifting.
Yeah, I think was in the past, but I think much more now.
Yeah.
There is a growth in hunger.
Yeah.
There is a growth in wanting experience and mysticism again.
Yeah.
There's a growth in like people wanting, I think, a greater a mystical experience of God, not just a, you know, our church structures at the moment are often club and classroom. So club, you go and you hang out and you do stuff. You do events, you know, it's like a club. Or classroom, you go along, you sit down, you're taught something from the front. And I think those models we've inherited and they're good. You know, there's real positives. But I think ever increasing is a hunger for something mystery, something mystical, something deeper. Mm. And I see that hunger rising in the young.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple things to note with it. It's one, as our friends ever increasingly get more hungry for experience, and not just hungry for experience, because you hear this stuff all the time when people are looking at God as, oh, I want proof.
Yeah.
But now there's like, oh, I want proof, and I'm actually going to open myself up to properly like seeing what this could be. There is a real openness.
Yeah.
And maybe that comes from social media, which we can touch on in a minute as well, because everyone sees everything. They see like these clips of miracles happening and they're like, oh, I didn't, like 200 years ago, you'd only hear it word of mouth from another village.
I also think there's a shift in the atheistic voice isn't satisfying. Do you know what I mean? There's a shift in people actually turning on that and saying, actually, you're not satisfying. This the answers that, you know, pure atheism or secular culture teaches isn't enough. And I in a weird way, there's an opportunity, there's a like a real opportunity for the church there, because you know, we do have the answer. You know, we have Jesus, and what once was what we were always clawing to fight with kind of like, oh, this is why you should believe, against the culture that was saying no, science and this and that and the other. And we know now they're not mutually exclusive. You know, we haven't got heads in the clouds as Christians, but also like I think people are increasingly not believing what these atheists give, you know, and the answers that they kind of, because that doesn't satisfy. We aren't just a random blob of cells that happen to come about. That doesn't satisfy what love is. You can't really articulate love. It doesn't make sense why someone would lay their life down for someone, why they would sacrifice in terms of just a simple evolutionary understanding, why we have such great empathy and forgiveness and self-sacrifice, all of these things, that there's a deeper meaning. And I think people are hungry for that.
Yeah. And I think as it shifts, there's two things that I'd quite like to pick your brains on.
Yeah.
How do we now navigate seeing the supernatural? What are some practicals to like, our friends done a Ouija board and now they're feeling really dark and like the stuff's going on. And how do I also have expectation of being able to see miracles happen on the street or stuff like pray into that as we see more of that coming? And secondly, how as Christians do we navigate when we also don't see that in an ever increasing spiritual like openness? Like when our friend says, oh, the Bible says there's miracles. I'm open to it. Tell me all about it. Pray for my leg to be healed.
Or my mum's dying of cancer. Where's God in that?
And then it doesn't happen.
Questions, yeah.
And so it's like, how do we respond to it almost when it does happen? Yeah. And how do we respond to it when it doesn't happen?
I think the thing that, what I talk about is like humble confidence. Then we have to have a humility. I think when it comes to dark stuff, like spiritual practices and, you know, Reiki, crystals, Ouija boards, all these kind of stuff, I think our attitude shouldn't be one of just, oh, that's all a load of rubbish. It should, I think we as Christians go, well, we recognize that there's spiritual forces at work. We recognize that there can be power in those things. You know, I had a situation with someone in my church who's kind of newish to the faith, who's got Hindu influence background, and who went to see a healer for their daughter. And I was like, look, and their daughter got better, you know. And it was like, okay, we had to be like, there is power in these things. There is power in spiritual practice. That's why they're done, and they've been done for thousands of years. It's not just, you can't just put it down to people are stupid or insane. You put it down to a realization that there is power in these things. And yet we are told, do not mess in that area, because you inadvertently open yourself up to things that aren't of God. You know, and I always say, why tap in, you know, why kind of cheat and tap into a pipe and like let the water come out? Why don't you go to the source? the source of power and spiritual activity, the good source is God, is the Holy Spirit. Like, tap into that, go there. Don't go into these other practices, because yes, there is a spiritual world and a realm and power, but that can open you up to other things moving in and around you. And in a sense, you are rejecting grace. You know, you are rejecting God's action in your life when you seek to go your own way into these realms. So my advice would be, yeah, there's power there, but I don't think you should, because you're opening yourself up. So come Christ's way. That's what I would say to that. And just pray for people to be protected and blessed if they do that.
And what about when we don't see things happen?
I mean, there's, the age old, there's mystery. I mean, there is mystery, and we don't know. We are called to have faith, and we are called to pray. And sometimes we pray and we see a healing happen, and I've seen that. And sometimes we pray and we don't see it in this time, but we know in this kind of scope of eternity, every prayer is yes and amen in Christ. So there will be a time of complete healing, of resurrection, of those things. And so we are called to actively engage in that place, because we are a people of the kingdom. You know, we're an Easter people, a resurrected people. We should be doing these things now, because we are members of this heavenly realm. And yeah, it's in God's hands. And you know, I don't know, in the economy of life, if every single person prayed, then maybe this shift of the spiritual would in somehow be overwhelmed. I don't know. There's no clear. The Bible isn't clear on why it doesn't happen. It just says you should.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I don't think it's dependent on necessarily the faith of the person or the faith of prayer. There's classic healing stories of Lord heal them and they're healed, and then like classic stories of people fasting for days and not healing. Okay. So it is definitely dependent on God, but we are called to be open and to pray.
Yeah.
So just pray.
I just want to say, like, for the viewers, this is a lot of information, and it comes with a lot of like confusion sometimes as well, and a lot of questions that can be sparked up in us. Like, I know I've even got questions like, oh yeah, why doesn't God heal that? Oh yeah, I wonder if we all prayed it. Like, we're even asking questions as we speak.
Yeah.
And I guess just to round it, I'd say if you have questions, that's not like scary. That's very normal. And it's actually like an invitation for us as we grow and as we develop as Christians to learn more and to like ask more and to question God. And God does have answers for us, and he's placed people in our lives to ask these questions too. So if you've got all these questions rising up in you, and you're like, what do I do with this? Do I like freak out and walk away from God? Absolutely not. Find someone, ask them the questions, sit with people, sit with God. Is actually an invitation to learn more and get a, and yeah, it's an invitation to love God more as well.
That's what I said at the beginning of that kind of discussion, is humble confidence. So have a humility. Have a humility. You might not get the answers. You might not sit with the tension of confusion. I would also say sometimes doubt your doubts. Like, we often are filled with, this can't happen, Or question that. Question those doubts. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it is like that. You know, don't just believe the doubt. Question your own self. But yeah, sit with humility. Sit with the tension of not knowing. We're in an age, you know, we're moving into the social media chat. We're in an age of rush. We're in an age of, I want immediacy to my answers. And I think part of our call as Christians is to sit sometimes in that place of going, I'm not sure, but I believe this, or I'm going to hold this.
So, yeah. No, that's brilliant. Hey guys, we had a bit of an audio failure at the end of the video there. So I'm redoing an outro in my church. But yeah, we just wanted to say a real thank you to Rev Chris for coming on and sharing his wisdom. And we actually decided, because he was so filled with wisdom, to do a second episode. So stay tuned, because next week there'll be a part two, and there'll be more to look at and unpack. So thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next week. Bye.